Sean Manaea signed with the New York Mets. Trade rumors are flying. Dylan Cease, Jesus Luzardo, Masataka Yoshida, and more. Chris Sale traded to the Braves. Let's go ahead and talk about it. What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets the Podcast again, all by ourselves. Very nice, excited. We got the podcast feedback for so for those of you who only want to listen to the podcast, you have that option. We'll now be on Spotify and Apple Podcasts again. If not, stick on the YouTube channel. We're putting a lot of effort into the video content, so we appreciate wherever you listen or wherever you watch us. Greatly appreciated. Shout out to the amazing support we've gotten over the last few episodes. Crazy good stuff. And we're going to talk about Sean Manaea. We're going to talk about some trade rumors because there have been some big names flying around. And then also just kind of a little bit of housekeeping because some teams that are going to be competing with the Mets this season made some big moves as well. James, how are we feeling, dude?
Feeling good. Sean Manaea move is, I think, exciting to a degree. Maybe not as exciting as some people have made it out to be, but I think it is nice the fact that the Mets have added another pitcher who very simply can pitch. And can pitch better than most of the other guys that were on the roster. It's a good thing right now. The rotation got stronger, got deeper, and got a little bit more stable, which is good.
I mean, I guess we're going to just talk about Sean Manaea right now.
Right then.
But Manaea is someone that is probably getting a little more play than he should on social media in terms of like what he could be to this team.
Because it's the Mets.
Because it's the Mets, and because we want to feel excited as Mets fans about something going on this offseason. Because relatively speaking, again, underwhelming probably from the casual fan perspective of like these, none of these guys are big names. None of these guys are particularly difference makers, but we've said it multiple times now on this podcast. When you look at how the roster's built, difference makers would obviously help a lot, but like they do have a bottom line that makes them like, you just need to have a competent major league team. And we're filling it with a lot of competent players.
I think that term difference maker might be being misconstrued by you a bit right now. Where
true.
I think like a difference maker on a team, like there's a difference between a difference and a difference maker, double difference. A difference between a difference maker for 162 and a difference for a difference maker in October. And okay. I think that a team that you want to get to the playoffs, you just need a lot of competency in pitching. That's where the Mets lagged last year. So this is a difference maker in a regular season stance. I don't know if the Mets make it to the postseason, it'll be very much, unless there's good development that happens, which is always possible, that he'll be a significant difference maker once you get to the postseason. That whole like thought exercise kind of reminds me of the fact like John Gray last year, like kind of reversed this. We're like, the Rangers picked him up a few years ago. They're like, we need competency in this rotation. And then it was kind of like actually the difference between like a John Gray and a Dane Dunning, which is kind of funny to think about. Okay. Where I think about Sean Manaea kind of between them. But John Gray wasn't a difference maker in the regular season, just injuries, ineffectiveness, comes out in the postseason, is a reliever, and just dominates because he throws 97.
It was great.
Whereas a guy like Dane Dunning can pitch in the regular season and have an ERA that was lower than everybody would have thought for like 120 innings, more than anybody would have thought. And that is a big reason that the Rangers even get to the postseason. Even using the Rangers again, a guy who's still a free agent who Mets fans clamor for, Jordan Montgomery. He's a guy that the Rangers don't reach the World Series without him. And even in the World Series, he was good for that, but not like good in a transferable sense. Just
totally.
Good in the fact that he pitched well sense, but I think if you run back those same Jordan Montgomery games again, I'm going way on a tangent here. But just like,
you're just angry about Jordan Montgomery. You don't want the Mets to sign.
I'm not angry about Jordan Montgomery. I'm just saying like I think like not calling someone not a difference maker is like just a little disrespectful. Like,
well, no, because okay, I think we both think of difference makers very differently.
Yeah,
we think about it differently.
Difference makers.
Difference maker. We're talking about like you sign a Yoshinobu Yamamoto. You
difference
sign
maker.
An Aaron Nola. Those are difference makers. Like all of a sudden that the bottom line of your team just got raised a bunch. Like, you went from...
But that's what I'm saying. I think the bottom line of the Mets team did get raised a good bit by getting another competent starting pitcher, just not maybe in the way that seems very obvious right now.
It doesn't raise it as much as it could of the other players. That's where I'm
for
more
sure.
So.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, yeah, you could have a difference maker of like... Because Sean Manaea does make the team better.
For sure.
I think that's where we're coming from here.
Yeah.
Is that Sean Manaea does make this team better. He's obviously not a frontline starter, never will be, never is going to be, probably.
Probably.
We don't know. And maybe
2%
one day he
chance.
Wakes up and throws 98.
Yeah.
But... He's very competent, and that is clearly what the Mets have been trying to do this offseason, is get a competent major league roster, because as you mentioned, starting pitching last year at times was just super bad.
Yeah, impossible to even deal with. And just off the bat, two-year, $24 million deal with an option for that second year, which is almost the exact same contract Sean Manaea signed last year with the San Francisco Giants, coming off his 1 year with the Padres. It was a two-year $25 million deal, or was this one $28
million?
$28 million. Two for 28. Last one was 2 for 25. I got stuck in between. So, like, off the bat, I'm thinking in my head, like, okay, this is a player who, since he got that player options, like, I believe my value will be better next year compared to this year. That was also the same bet he made himself last year. And he was true by about $1 million.
Yeah.
So, that is right. So, like, okay, look, there's some confidence here that, like, the next year will be better than the last. I think that's the biggest thing the Mets did here that I think is important, where you're signing a guy who may not have had his best season yet, which is very important for pitching analysis and when signing a free agent. You want that next year to be better than the one before. You're paying for the next one, not the one before. So a lot of people have been throwing out old Sean Manaea stats from the A's, old volume stuff he used to do. I think we very much have to only look at like what happened the last few years for Sean Manaea, at least the last two, to kind of paint the picture of what he is and what he can be.
Yeah, and you were telling me a story before we started recording about an article that you read where he had that horrible, horrible year with the Padres we know about that kind of knocked off the perceived like opinion of Sean Manaea, because it was always with the A's, man, there's something here. When's it going to happen? And a lot of the time it was because he couldn't stay healthy for a full season. And then he went to the Padres. You're like, wow, a winning team, a winning organization. Like, this could be the chance for him to kind of take that next step forward from rather just being an okay pitcher to being a great pitcher. And he didn't do that, but there was good reason behind it.
Totally. Great article from last spring training, just before the 2023 season, by Andrew Baggerly. Great writer, beat writer for the San Francisco Giants. You know Baggerly?
Yep, good writer.
Fantastic writer. It's about, it kind of paralleled Sean Manaea and Sean Gelly, who was like the mutant, like 9 foot tall pitcher.
So tall.
For the Giants, he's awesome. I just think he's going to be good one day because he's so weird. But
Sean Manaea.
And Jelly, both of them.
No, I'm saying, just go back to Sean
Manaea. Yeah, Sean Manaea, too many tangents. But basically, the fact that he was kind of getting ready that year, 2022, still with the A's, like trying to work on some stuff, tinker with some stuff, trying to learn some new things. But he got traded to the Padres just prior to opening day. And then Baggerly talks this. I'm going to drop some more quotes later from this article. But that he was kind of pushing for new pitch shapes and moving along the rubber. As a lefty, moving to the third base side with a fading fastball was kind of weird philosophical shift, because now you're starting inside, a pitcher's going to wind up very down the middle, and he got hit very hard because of that.
Yeah.
But basically, he was trying to make adjustments, but he couldn't really give them the time they needed to see if they were going to work, because it was trial by fire. Like, I'm on a winning team. Again, he was traded just before opening day. So if something didn't work, you had to scrap it, go again, try something new, because your results were really important here. And that kind of screwed his head a little bit. And now, went that offseason, went to the Giants, went to Driveline, learned some new tricks, picked up some new velocity. Talked about the fact that this was the first time he'd ever used even modern training techniques.
Like a weighted ball?
Weighted ball, specifically. Wow. So, and then instantly, a guy who's 6'5", 240, put on tons of weight, starts using weighted balls, adds 2 to 3 miles an hour velocity in his fastball, and you're like, oh, there's a pitcher here. But also, again, just like contextualize things. He's in the same AAV range as Jack Flaherty, who signed earlier this offseason.
We know stinks.
Sure. As John Gray, who we talked about before, as Kyle Hendricks, as Zach Eflin, which makes me want to literally die.
That one hurts.
Yeah. As Tyler Anderson, as Jose Quintana and Luis Severino are they on this team, as Kyle Gibson, as Kyle Freeland, as Alex Wood, as Andrew Heaney, as Ross Stripling. This is the tier of pitchers for money, and usually the market dictates kind of what the guy's going to be. Like, we've talked about the fact that these major league offices now have like a hive mind. No one's going far away or against or opposed to what teams are going to offer. Like, no one's really blowing anybody out of the water, which is, again, part of that Yoshinobu Yamamoto discussion from a few weeks ago.
This is part of also the players talking about like the owner collusion, where it's like there's no, I don't think there's like purposeful collusion, but because everybody has just so much info and everybody knows what the price is of everybody,
yeah,
there's no reason to overpay unless you really, really see something that somehow nobody else sees.
Totally, and that's kind of important to think about, again, with a guy like Manaea, who has over 1,000 major league innings and has never really been great. He's been fine. He's shown good bulk. He's had good flashes. But again, he's never really been great. And the closest he ever really, and that's what this contract says, but the closest he ever really got to that, again, was at flashes last season. I think that's kind of what to talk about. Said before, everyone's been saying it over and over again ad nauseum. Went to Driveline last winter and this one.
And we love that.
We love that. Driveline's amazing. Tread's great. All these new pitching labs are great for these players. Like, take the training into their own hands, increase their value, become better baseball players. Love that. Put on tons of weight, add velocity. People are talking about the sweeper thing a lot, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But another part of this piece is that the old pitching coordinator for the Giants, who's now with the White Sox, Brian Bannister.
Former Met
Brian Bannister, follower of draft Nick Mark, would love to get him on this podcast one day, but that's a pipe dream.
Might be tough. He might
be
busy.
Yeah, he works for the White Sox, so it's going to be a hard one. But he basically said, he sat Manaea down, was like, hey, you're not the same pitcher anymore, man. Like, I understood you were like a changeup, running sinker, four-seam fastball kind of guy. Like, you were pitching to contact, trying to stay off the barrel. But you throw 94, 95 now from the left side. He was like, there's no reason you can't be Robbie Ray or Carlos Rodon. Like, you kind of had to, like, he said he had to get this mindset into Sean Manaea. It was like, you're a different pitcher. And I'm sure that's a really hard thing to adjust to, again, as a pitcher like Sean Manaea, who, again, coming into this year had over 850 major league innings and, like, had pretty good results doing it, was making $12.5 million. It's not chump change. It's not, like, superstar money, but it's also, like,
you're pretty happy.
Yeah, like, I was paid for a service. Like, it's hard to rewire the way you are as a baseball player in your head, so I'm sure that was a reason for some of the ups and downs you went through.
Especially because he's a guy who was he's playing for his next contract still. Like, even when he signs a 2-year deal.
And one with an option.
Yeah, one with an option. He still is playing for more. Like, Gerrit Cole, all those guys, they get those years because they're so good. They don't have to change anything. Like, they can just keep being the same pitcher they are, and everyone's very happy. A guy like Sean Manaea is like, that could be scary. It's like, well, I just got a 2-year contract for $25 million. If I change it, what if I don't get signed? What if I stink even worse? And now I just cost the money that I could have made this offseason. Those are all things I'm sure these guys think of, but it is encouraging that Sean Manaea saw those changes, made those changes, and was able to put those into practice last year with the Giants.
And this also ties back to, again, that year with the Padres where he seemed very unsettled, uneasy. He said, I was all over the place. I was always searching, still in this Andrew Bagley article. Last year was the best thing for me, lighting a fire under my butt and getting my routines down. I can't stay in this game if I'm lazy. It's disrespectful to the people who came before me and will come after me.
Nice.
I realize if I want to be up here and I want to be the person I can be, I have to put the work in and do the little things that most people don't think about. That's a lot of good stuff. That's dog stuff. But again, then when he got into the season, it was like still a little bit back and forth. It was a little weird. He started the season as a traditional starter for this Giants team. He had more velocity, but the sweeper that people were talking about wasn't part of his repertoire. It was running four-seam fastball, a lot of arm side run, a little bit of lift on it. It was a changeup that he's been tinkering with that shape for a few years. Now it had more drop, and now that it had more velocity on his fastball, different velocity gradient made the changeup more effective, and like a harder gyro slider. When I say gyro slider, it's more of a slider that kind of drops on you rather than like a sweeper, like a slider, like moving more horizontally. Better for the YouTube people right now, but more of just like a dropper, which you see more from lefty pitchers because that's better against hitters from both sides of the plate.
Edwin Diaz throws a gyro slider,
yes.
Right? So that's the best example for you guys if you're thinking about what you can expect from the slider shape, maybe.
Doesn't move a ton, but it's more of like, it's changeup-ish, but it will have less velocity in the changeup, and it'll definitely move more, and then it'll be spinning significantly more of it too, so the hitter's eye will pick it up a different way. But he started that season, 6 of his first 8 appearances were as a traditional starter. One was as a bulk reliever with an opener. One was just as a reliever. Big theme here is that the Giants were putting him all over the place the whole season.
Which is also really tough, probably,
totally,
as a pitcher.
Especially when you just reworked your whole repertoire, when you just had a whole year of trying new things. Now the organization's like, we're going to give you stability. And then they keep trying you new ways. Really weird. I'm sure that was probably had to do with the fact that, again, I'm sure everyone in the league offered Sean Manaea the same contract. I'm sure he went with the Mets. I'm sure they gave him a little more stability in his role.
Seemed like he'll probably be a starter more likely.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in a little bit. But again, velocity was higher, no sweepers, fastballs, changeup, sliders. A 25% strikeout rate in those first like 40 innings. It was really good.
Fine, super fine.
But walking a lot of the guys, and he got completely blown up. Yeah. He had an 8 ERA against some of the worst offenses in baseball. The Nationals, the Mets, the Cardinals, the Padres, the Brewers, the Royals, the Tigers. Really bad. He got blown up by bad teams. So then they push him back to the bullpen, and this is where he brought that sweeper on. The velocity, it still went down a little bit just because start of the year, but it still kind of held really nice in the middle. Sweeper got really good results, and then by the end of the year, they push him back to the rotation. I think they were just one out of arms, and two, they'd kind of fallen out of the playoff race, so maybe it was like a nod to him, be like, all right, you've been saying you're a starter all year. Be a starter for a month. Go make your money.
Was his option a player option or a club option?
I believe it was player because he opted out.
Okay. Oh, he opted out. Okay. Gotcha. Because I was going to say maybe that was also one of these things, too, where the Giants were like, we got to see if you can be a starter, maybe, and that would give us more incentive, but it's moot now.
Yeah. Then those last four starts of the year was awesome. 2.25 ERA over 24 innings, 18 strikeouts versus 2 walks. Command was good. He was missing enough bats. Really good. It was very Quintana-ish, if I got to say. But then the fastball velocity went down again as he was starting. It still like would never got down near to where he was with the A's and the Padres. Like, he definitely put on the weight and he had more velocity, but he went down from like 94.5 to like back barely at 93 by the end of the year.
Okay.
So again, it's still about a tick and a half higher than where he was, but still lower than where he was. And again, once he went back in rotation, the sweeper evaporated again. He almost threw none the whole month of September when he was a full-time starter. Went back to the harder slider and a lot more changeups. So it seems like that is kind of the starting recipe for him, and it got really good results. That probably is what the Mets saw and all the other teams saw. We're like, okay, we saw this little bit right here where he was very effective starter for a short period of time. We could probably make him a starter.
Give me the TikTok pitch for Sean Manaea here. I mean, like, if we're making a TikTok, which we are, we're setting it up right now for you guys. This is a little behind the scenes stuff. What's the Sean Manaea TikTok intro?
Sean Manaea TikTok intro. Let's think. Can Sean Manaea be a successful starting pitcher? Good start, right?
Yeah. Or are we going with the Sean Manaea is not a TikTok video guy.
Sean Manaea just simply is not a TikTok guy. Sean Manaea had different roles last year, picked up velocity, but then it went down by the end of the year. Picked up a new sweeper they didn't use traditionally as a starter, and still was okay, but who knows how it's going to keep going in the future.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's kind of also where we want to now bring the conversation back to, is like, what to expect from Sean Manaea.
Yeah.
And that kind of how we started the conversation, which was, like, people are talking about him more than he probably deserves to because it's the Mets and everything like that. At the end of the day, is a depth rotational starter.
It is. And that's why I kind of framed where his contract is in terms of the rest of the league for you guys as well. It's guys like Andrew Heaney. It's like, maybe we can get another stop out of these guys. It's guys like Kyle Hendricks. Like, you put you in the rotation, I don't have to think about you.
Yeah. Five days. See you next
week. Just like Jose Quintana. That's kind of what it feels like. He's just bigger than them. And like, he just kind of has fun hair. So I think people kind of keep going back to this. And he has the driveline thing right now with him, which is great. He's making improvements as a player. Right, and maybe the sweeper does come back in rotation. Maybe he finds a way to use both his sliders at the same time. I saw a Baseball Prospectus writer talking about this morning the fact that Manaea has used like these kind of sweeperish sliders going back to 2020 in short spurts, but now he went to driveline, made that pitch better, and that's how he was more confident using it. But when he was only using it in the bullpen compared to rotation, because sweepers don't perform well against hitters the opposite side of the plate, especially when they see them multiple times. Another huge fact about Manaea last year: I think he only completed 5 innings 7 times the whole season.
Checks.
And he only faced 43 hitters the third time through the order the whole year, and that's a small sample. It means nothing. But the ERA was 9, and hitters' averages was 300. That third time through the order.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have games this year where Sean Manaea is gonna have like a no hitter through 4, and then like Ronald Acuna and Austin Riley are gonna be due up.
Get them out.
And the Mets are gonna get the guy the fuck out of the game. Hopefully they're doing that. Right. That's what I want.
But truthfully, and again, that would be good process. Like, I think that Mets fans are just dying for this to be like, here's our 5-man rotation, here's what's gonna happen. But it seems like this signing, as well as some of the other things that are happening this offseason, as well as like keeping Jose Budo and Tyler McGill like on ice, I think it's gonna be a little more modern deployment of these pitchers. Like, Sean Manaea is probably a guy who's not gonna see a third time in the order unless he's able to use that slider and sweeper together effectively, to where the sweeper's getting lefties once in a while against righties, the changeup and the gyro slider used against both, and the fastball's getting hitters both sides of play out, which I think it can. Fastball had great results last year with some extra arm side fade and more velocity. A really good pitch last year it was. But he's such a tweener, which is where that money comes from. Again, like, where all his other contracts are like, this is a tweener kind of guy, and that's what he's paid as.
And it totally feels like something that the Giants did last year was they split him with Tony Disco, Anthony DeSclafani, for those of you at home who don't know nicknames. But like, Tony Disco or him would start, go one time, maybe 1.5 times through the lineup.
Yeah.
And then they'd switch it because Tony Disco is a righty. Manaea, obviously, a lefty. So,
and Disco, if I'm not mistaken, has a curveball as his most used secondary pitch.
I'm going to lean to you on that one. Okay. I don't know what his pitches are.
I'll double check.
Those guys, like, kind of piggybacking off each other, where you're getting two pitchers to basically give you one quality start, which is kind of, I'm not going to say we can expect that from the Mets, but we wouldn't be surprised, or I think we both wouldn't be surprised if you see like a Manaea Budo or a Manaea McGill, or maybe Mike Vassell gets called up, and this is how you ease him into the rotation. Maybe this is how you ease Christian Scott into the rotation. One of these prospect guys could piggyback off Manaea or be the opener, and then Manaea comes in for a little more length. Whatever that is, I think the Mets, this gives them a little leeway to be creative. Maybe he does it with Severino sometimes. Who knows? Like, I think, like you said, it's going to be very modern with how the Mets seem to be approaching pitching, which is probably going to drive 95% of Mets fans absolutely fucking crazy. Because, like, again, you're going to have like the no-hitter through 3, and I can't believe they pulled him. And sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's not. But I think at the end of the day, you got to know that the process with these guys, like a guy like Manaea, the realistic chance that he's going to go 6 innings and be as effective as he was in the first 3, just unlikely.
Especially given, again, like the limitations of pitch mix and just how the fact that he's just not like a ceiling kind of pitcher. So the more times hitters see him, especially when his primary secondary pitch is going to be a pitch that righties are going to look, it's going to look like a beach ball to them second, third time through the order. The fact the Giants shelter them from that, and the fact that, I don't know, even projections like still love him. And again, he has a long time, long career now where he's been pretty good most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about like he had the hype in Oakland as someone who was like a good pitcher.
Could be a step.
Could never stay healthy, waiting for that next step. And they thought San Diego was going to be that, and it didn't happen. And that kind of calmed down a little bit like the expectation or the I don't want to say prospect is not that anymore, but like the idea of what he could be kind of knocked it down a little bit. But doesn't mean that he still can't be a very solid pitcher for this team.
Totally. And I think that's kind of what this is. Like, projections love him. Right now, the steering projections have him at less than a 4 ERA for 150 innings.
That'd be awesome.
At like almost 10 strikeouts per 9. Like, that's a great pitcher right there.
Sick.
But that's, I think, also where the expectation should lie. A guy who's about a 4 ERA for about 150 innings.
Like, Goodyear ends up below it.
Yeah.
Bad year ends up in the 5s.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And also, like, that innings limitation, I think, is the important thing right now, because we're just seeing so many few pitchers year over year even cross that threshold. We're seeing more 6-man rotations. We're seeing more outings that are less than 6 innings. We're seeing more guys not see the order for a third time. So we as fans, I think, have to kind of redirect, like, how we think of our brains in terms of pitchers. Like, same thing with even just effectiveness. Last year, the league-wide ERA was about 4.3.
Yeah.
So Sean Manaea is a 4.0 ERA. That's a great year.
Better than league average.
Way better than league average. That's like a third of a run better than league average. That is incredible. So I think that is kind of where we have to recalibrate as fans, even just as like analyst podcasters here, about like what is good, especially for what the money he's getting. Because like, there is some ceiling on that, but the ceiling on that is like a 3.5 ERA for 160 innings.
ERA is also
Huge ceiling.
ERA is also so funny because when you think about it, like, it's projecting how many earned runs you give up over 9 innings. And now that no one goes 9 innings anymore, it's like a little bit starting to become outdated.
Pulled down.
And for a guy like Manaea, like having a 4 ERA, that's what, like 2 or 3 runs in 5 innings?
Yeah.
Like that's a great start. We get that out of Sean Manaea every 5 days. We're ecstatic. You just got to hope the bullpen holds it down, the team hits, which they are more than capable of doing.
And I think, again, ERA contextually is always going to be a team stat. If your team is better, everyone in your team's ERAs are going to be lower because that means that you're leaving the pitchers are stranding more people on base, so your defense is playing better. You're getting a little bit luckier at the end of the day. ERA, a lot of ERA has to do with luck, always, and kind of the ballpark you play in, too. Luckily for the Mets, is a big one. So most Mets pitchers' ERAs will be suppressed, especially once you get to a big enough sample. So I think that's kind of part of the discussion, too. But, like, I definitely pause Mets fans to be like, this is like the signing with upside. Like, this is the guy who can save the day. Severino kind of is that one. He's actually the guy with ceiling. And that's why you pay these guys the same amount. Like, one guy's going to give us some volume. One guy, we're taking a shot. And this is exactly, very openly, candidly, what the Mets said they were kind of going to do coming into this offseason. We're like, we want maybe 2 or 3 pitchers here. And we're going to take them, like, going to look different a little bit. That's different. Severino, Manaea. Even the way that one's a righty, one's a lefty. One throws up here and one throws down here. Like, it's all very different kinds of pitches. But now with a rotation, at least feels somewhat complete, competent, and like can get through 162.
I feel like I'm going to anger some people with here, but like, for as not exciting as this offseason has been name-wise, it's been kind of fun. It's been kind of fun with, like, where the Mets are looking. These are all things that, if you've been listening to us for years, things that we had been begging the Mets. Like,
process.
We want the good players around guys like these.
Totally.
Because, like, this is how you can build, like, a sneaky good team. And I don't think, and I, again, tempering expectations big time. Mets are at best the third best team in the National League East right now. Like, the Phillies and Braves are still steps ahead of them. It's not close.
You know, it's funny, some of the projection systems are coming out, the main one being Zips on Fangraphs. It actually has the Mets and the Phillies right now, like, the same.
Really?
Both of them, like, 83.
I can also understand why they would hate the Phillies, because they are just, like,
bad defense. Two pitchers,
home run reliant. Like, if they don't hit home runs, they're not scoring runs.
Totally.
But we also have seen the Phillies for a couple years now, and as much as I hate them, I can't doubt them anymore.
Really good, yeah. I tried to tell you that a few years ago. Like, it's also just part of, like, now, again, broader discussion of, like, what this Mets team is. And, like, there's something else going to piss off some Mets fans. Like, the Mets have had one of the most active off seasons of any team in the league.
Literally.
Like, we've turned over this roster so hardcore. This is like, what, 10 new players in the 40 man in the last month and a half? Like,
can we name them?
most teams don't do this in regular offseason. This is a big undertaking for David Stearns right now in the base. People are gonna be like, oh, these guys still fucking work for the Mets? No. We're just, like, giving some credit because there was a lot of change that needed to happen. The depth of this roster was depleted. There was not much there wasn't.
I'm just thinking about, like, Imagine the idea of, like, someone listening to this and be like, oh, they still love the Mets. It's like, guys, they got rid of us. Yeah. We should hate them.
Killed us.
We should hate them. We should be like, wow, we could talk shit right now. And we're like, we don't want to. This team is interesting. Like, these are good moves.
And it's not, I don't think this team is really as bad as people make it out to be right now.
I'd rather people think it's bad, though. I would love to.
I don't want expectations. I'm done with expectations. I'm almost done with good players. We had too many of those last few years.
Way too many good players.
No more good players. No more expectations. Just want to play some ball. Frisky, fun, be around 500, make a move, go on a run, play some defense, get a clutch hit.
It's going to be a baseball year.
It's going to be, this is really for people. This is going to be, people love baseball year.
That's going to be our saying, I think, this year.
You got to love ball.
Like, got to love ball to watch this team. Because they're not going to be particularly exciting, but wow, they're going to play some ball.
It's going
to
be scrappy. You're going to, like, Kodai Senga, it's like, I'm going to put, how's he going to be as good as he was last year?
It's going to be impossible.
He was so good.
And if he is, he's leaving the next year.
Yeah,
he's
going to
take that opt out.
Yeah,
he's going to be out of here.
He doesn't have an opt out. It's a vesting opt out. Kodai Senga has to reach 400 innings pitch over this first 3 years with the team to get there. He got 160 last year.
Okay.
So he needs about 240 over the next 2 years to actually be able to opt out. So maybe that's another reason the Mets go with, like, a 6-man rotation with, like, kind of some piggybacking stuff.
Take his innings down.
Yeah, maybe screw him up a little bit. I don't think they're going to do that. I'm never going to say that. But again, there was also, like, a Tommy John clause in Kodai Senga's contract. He's a guy who had major injury concerns coming from Japan. So right now, him being the linchpin to this rotation is by far the most worrisome thing about this team.
I will say that who made that graphic on Twitter that you saw that, like, had the Mets
pukes.
Projected rotation, and it was Kodai Senga and then the rest of
four
it was the puke faces.
It was a guy called, he's the Gilds or the Glids. He's a really good high-stakes fantasy baseball player.
Okay, yeah, that was very funny. But, like, I think if you don't dive deep into it just at the surface level, like, I totally get that.
Disgusting.
Take.
Pukes.
Totally get it.
So
I think
puke.
As you dive deeper into it, you can start to at least understand what the Mets are thinking, what the process is.
Yeah, and it's pretty Brewers-ish.
Yeah, it's
very
it's
Brewers-ish.
Pretty Brewers-ish.
Pretty Brewers-ish.
This is the Mets are the Brewers.
The Mets are the Brewers, but they have a $34 million shortstop, a $20 million first baseman, a $20 million center fielder, and a $20 million closer.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, great.
Those Brewers teams have been awesome with that.
And LCS in 2018.
Yeah, right. And then
Chase Anderson, Wade Miley, Jolys Chacín. 2017.
Yeah.
Brandon Woodruff eventually became in that starting rotation as a rookie.
Peralta was a swing man, like a two-inning, three-inning guy. Yeah. It's going to be weird. It's going to be a funky adventure.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I think the team's fine. Like, I'll just like...
Tickets are going to be cheap.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to go to some weekday games, like against the Brewers, and it's going to be like free.
I like he went with the Brewers again there.
Yeah.
But again, like this team isn't sexy. This team isn't like exhilarating, but this team is now... It has a 40-man roster that's competitive in a Major League Baseball landscape, which is good enough for me.
Have we filled up the 40-man now?
It is, I think, full. I think someone actually has to officially get cut from Manaea to be official.
Yeah, and he hasn't been official.
He's not been official yet. Ah, was he?
I don't think he was, because there's not a video on the Mets YouTube channel. So.
No? Yeah, it's true.
I feel like, even though we're obviously not with him anymore, we're still kind of connected in a way where we know what's going on, and I don't think I've seen anything official, unless it's happened in the last 2 hours.
The last couple tweets for the Mets. They're casting for their first hip-hop hype team.
Yeah, that's where our money went.
National Bobblehead Day. Lock in your tickets. 2024.
So no.
More bobblehead giveaways.
Happy birthday.
Harrison Bather. No birthdays today. Okay. A couple retweets from Harrison Bather. Yeah, so Sean Manaea would fill up the 40-man roster was filled up with Bather. Manaea took that last spot. Someone from the 40-man will get cut now.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be someone probably insignificant.
That's me. Like, the 40-man roster is full, but the Mets still have a lot of junk on there that they can parse through.
Phil Bickford.
Phil Bickford's going to be in this rotation. Fastball properties are good enough to pitch in the major leagues. I'm not giving up on Philly.
All right, let's talk about now some of these rumors that have been swirling around.
It's 25 minutes. How do we do that?
Because we're sick in the fucking head.
That was crazy.
We love podcasts. Yep.
Sean Manaea for 25 minutes. Oh, my God.
We've been held back for a year and a half of being able to talk about this.
Yeah.
So I think now that we've had the opportunity, we're excited. Right. That was crazy, Sean Manaea long.
Run around the league, 10, 15 minutes here. Chris Sale trade, I think. First thing, no chronological. Super interesting. Braves got a guy who I think pitched a lot better than people realized last year, has a lot of ceiling, and it kind of just gives them the strategy of, like, we don't care. Like, this is kind of the opposite now when you're in a different stage of team building as the Mets with Sean Manaea. Like, Braves are comfortable. They have their volume.
They're also going to score 8 runs a game.
Totally. Now we want our ceiling. If Chris Sale throws, like, 75 innings the regular season, they probably really do not care.
No.
We want him healthy on October 1st to maybe pitch 4 or 5 innings in the divisional series in a game. That's it.
And with that extension, we want him healthy for 2025 as well.
100%. So I think that is kind of a move where, like, that's kind of when you're at that stage of team building, you could do that. Similar to where the Rangers kind of realized they were last year with Eovaldi and Jacob deGrom. We're like, if both these guys are healthy, we're going to win the World Series. If one of these guys are healthy, we might win the World Series. And that's exactly what happened. So that's kind of... You could tip your cap to a team that's like much closer to a contention than that. Similar to the Dodgers with Glasnow. Similar to the Dodgers with the next move that happened. Teoscar Hernandez. But just also briefly, like, this Braves conversation kind of goes into like where the Mets are and other trade rumors. The fact that they were hot on the case for Dylan Cease. And very clearly, they offered Vaughn Grissom. And very clearly, the White Sox said that's not enough. But he was enough for Chris Sale. Kind of just talks about where they are right now in terms of like how much pitching costs in this market. Free agents and trades in and of their own right. But... interesting trade. I think Grissom's a great spot for him in Boston, but Braves did get better.
Yeah, no, they definitely did get better. Their rotation is super high variance, though.
But you want that.
No, of course. No, yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. There's just like, there's the concerns that you have with them are real with their rotation. But if the stuff hits, wow.
And even if it doesn't hit until like September 19th,
yeah, well, yeah, they're making the playoffs.
Just get there. We don't care. Like we can count on Freed. We can count on Strider. We can give Morton 140.
The only time they
Sale
won a World Series was when Acuna wasn't playing.
That's what I'm saying.
So
yeah,
they don't even need him.
Yeah, the guy's a killer.
He's not a winner.
Not a team player.
No,
there.
He's not a winner.
But
it's a problem.
They're gonna bring up Hurston Waldrop this year. He's gonna be awesome
for no
reason.
God, that one was so frustrating. He was so obvious. Because we know I do a lot of draft stuff on the back end. I'm like, Hurston Waldrop is the guy that everyone
Super
should
gross.
Be drafting in terms of pitcher. I've been money with pitchers weirdly in the draft.
Yeah.
Very good.
I just love the trade because it was so even. Like, the Red Sox are going to miss the playoffs with Chris Sale. They're going to miss the playoffs without Chris Sale.
And it's just, like, money they don't have to pay him now.
And now they just got, like, 6 years of control on someone who's, like, going to play perfectly in their ballpark. High contact, right-handed hitter. Awesome.
20 homers, 20 doubles off that green monster.
280.
Sure.
He's going to be they're going to love him up there in Boston.
He can play left field with his little baby arm and throw the ball, like, 65
exactly.
feet to the shortstop cutoff.
His little baby arm. So cute. Little Vaughn Grissom trying to play shortstop. Who could have ever guessed that was not going to work? But I think it just goes to show where the Mets are in these trade negotiations and where what you had to give up for a guy like Dylan Cease, who we're going to talk about now, even a guy like Jesus Azar that we're going to talk about now, where someone who has hit really well in the major leagues but not fielded well and still had prospects shine on him could not get one of those.
Yeah.
You had to go get the guy who was old and not going to give you volume.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Sale's what, like 32?
35 now?
No.
34?
He's 34?
He's old.
I thought he was
sneaky
still younger than we thought.
34, exactly.
34,
on
wow.
the head.
Good call. Good call, James. Well done. You know numbers? No, you know ages, not numbers.
I know ages on pitchers. I know handedness of hitters. I know pitch mixes, and that's about it.
Yeah, don't know what way a pitcher throws, though. Lefty, righty.
Sometimes I don't.
It's crazy.
So much more for hitters.
It's nuts that you don't know the pitching side of it, especially because you're the pitching whisperer.
Nevertheless, let's talk about these other pitchers now. First, Dylan Cease, then Jesus Azar, though. Cease is a guy that has been linked to the Mets. Maybe the Mania, I think, threw some cold water on it. A lot of the writers and stuff are saying that it's much less likely now. Vaughn Grissom was enough to get him. Cease is a guy who had one incredible year as a pitcher.
Yes.
Great prospect. Originally came over to the White Sox in the Eloy Jimenez trade.
Jose Quintana trade.
That was Jose. We also have him called Eloy Jimenez trade. But yeah, went over in that trade across town, Chicago. One incredible year, I think it was 2019, 2021?
2021,
where he's just one of the best pitchers in baseball. Cy Young candidate, lights out, no one could touch him. Fastball goes, throws hard, slider's great. Some people have always thrown cold water on him. My guy Nick Pollock from Pitcherless has really never believed in his stuff at all, kind of thinks that one year was the outlier.
And wow,
kind of,
really?
And it kind of seems like that now, but like it feels very obvious that a White Sox team that hasn't really invested much in the pitch development or pitch design.
Or computers or technology.
First year they're going to. So I think Chris Getz, Brian Bannister, means there probably is more ceiling on Dylan Cease.
I think the Mets to get him, I mean, you're going to have to give up a lot, like you said. Like the Vaughn Grissom wasn't enough.
Not enough.
What would that even look like for the Mets? Because now we can talk about some prospects a little bit here. I'd love to give them Kevin Parada. Do they want Kevin Parada?
I think everyone now across the league is kind of aware that Kevin Parada was a little bit of fool's gold.
Is what he is.
His college swing decisions, nor exit velocities, were really high grade, just he always produced. And that got him drafted so highly, especially as a catcher. People thought could definitely hold down the position defensively in the major leagues.
And I'm not going to penalize the Mets for taking him there because that was the year we had the two first-round picks. And Parada was like a top five projected guy and dropped like quite a bit down to the Mets. So it's kind of like one of those like
because
value
perceived. It's value perceived because those teams knew that the swing decisions, exit velocities weren't that
good.
And
I'm not going to say that there's not a world where Kevin Parada doesn't come up and isn't good.
No, like, it's definitely fine.
Totally exists. To be fair, we don't know as much probably about him like as necessary. It's just like from what we've seen and heard, he's relatively unimpressive.
Yeah.
I think is the word I would use.
He has not beat the Kevin Plucky allegations from me.
Yeah, that's
that I gave
of...
that I gave privately, just as a guy who was also a great catcher in college, first round pick.
He was a batting champ in the minors.
That's saying, and also just so was Tomas Nido. But yeah. Also just never really had either the swing decisions or the raw power, which is again where Prada feels. But again, that I don't know. So I don't know. Yeah. I feel like you have to start this conversation with Luis Angel Acuña.
You think that's the guy?
And then you have to see if they want him, because that kind of mirrors the Grissom thing a little bit, where I'm sure a team like the White Sox who are resetting everything, they're like, yeah, give me some prospects with high upside with who play premium positions.
Yeah.
And then you probably have to supplement that with maybe even a Parada, maybe an Alex Ramirez, guys who had more shine than they have right now.
Sure,
and then
probably want some pitching.
And then probably another pitching prospect. Like, that's probably the package that you need to get a guy.
And I just don't think the Mets are going to do that.
So I think there's a world where Christian Scott could be better than Dylan Cease in 24 months.
Ooh, I like that.
It's true. I'm obsessed with Christian Scott right now. I think he's amazing. I think he's going to pitch for the Mets this year.
Don't you let me down.
I think all of these Mets pitching prospects come through the system are part of the Mets' decision-making this offseason where they want to get guys exposure in any way they can.
Yeah.
In these roles that we saw Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddy Peralta get their first exposure in. 40 to 60 pitches at a time.
2018 Brewers?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't have to bring these guys. I don't want to see how tough you are by going into the seventh inning. Like, they always, like, Buckle used to do with Tyler McGill 2 years ago when he was just gutting it out with no stuff.
How many times would we be at games? And we're like, if McGill or Peterson comes out again, I'm going to scream. And it's like, here they go. And then they give up a walk, and then they give up hip and you take him out, you're like, oh great,
every single time Matt Olson,
for no reason,
every time Matt Olson saw David Peterson third time he had a home run. I don't want to see stats on it because I know it's true, but I think that's part of the context right here. Then you go to a guy like Jesus Lazardo. First, you think the Mets are gonna trade for Dylan Cease?
No,
me neither.
I would love
them
to
be cool.
Don't think they're going to.
No,
doesn't seem like it.
Then Jesus Lazardo has always been the top prospect. He got weirdly hit by injuries and then a weird year in COVID where he had COVID really badly and then came back and then got sick or hurt again, lost the whole year. Really stalls development, then traded one-for-one for Starling Marte. One of the weirder trades that we've seen happen in the last, like, 5 years of baseball.
Yeah.
Some real stupid A shit. And then, all of a sudden, last year, he came on the scene. He was the guy who was always expected to be. He was throwing 98 miles an hour with a wicked slider.
Looked really good.
Again, he's another guy, though, where that shape on the fastball isn't really good, so it's all about the velocity for him. In his career, when he's dipped below 95, the fastball effectiveness goes out the window, and his entire effectiveness goes out the window. So he's very velocity-driven, because it's a fader, but not even that much fade, and, like, no hop whatsoever.
He kind of throws from an interesting arm angle of where it's, like, three-quarters-ish, lefty. But it doesn't really allow also him
lefty.
To get
know
a
that
lot
one.
Of, like, zip on it, like, no. In terms of, like, that what looks like a rising fastball.
He doesn't have that at all. It's also hard for lefties to get that in general. Because
it's just the release points.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but usually a lot of lefties, like Manaea's case, you kind of lean into the fade on it. Usually you want one of the two with your fastball to make it really good. Either you get the hop and hitters are swinging under it, or you get the fade and hitters aren't getting a barrel on it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of part of it. You either want like a lot of one of them, not really a lot of both of them, because then if you get a lot of hop and fade, then it's just like you're kind of just on the bat path.
With Jesus Luzardo, do you think he's going to cost more or less than Dylan Cease?
I think significantly more.
What's his control? Take a look at how long
he has four more years.
He has four more years? He's going to cost a lot. That's like Jet Williams, Luis Angel Acuña, maybe like, I'm not all in the same trade, but we're talking about like
multiple upper end prospects.
Like a combination of those, including Drew Gilbert, probably Ryan Clifford as well, maybe a Christian Scott.
Free agent 2027.
Yeah.
This is first year of arbitration eligibility.
Oh, he's going to cost an insane amount.
An arm and a leg.
There's almost no shot. I'd say there's a negative 0% chance that the Mets get this guy.
I don't even know who would have enough to trade for him right now.
The Dodgers, just because their farm system's always loaded. Like who?
Mets farm system can do it. We're top five suddenly. We're going to talk to Matt Eddy very soon. We're going to do a full overlook of the Mets minor league system. We're going to bring it in for you guys, Baseball America style.
Orioles?
Yeah, but they're just...
That'd be a fun place to have it.
They're poor.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're... Well... Like, sort of poor.
I guess, but also, all their prospects are the same thing, the only thing the Marlins have. A lot of infielders who aren't elite at defense.
Who are the Marlins infielders?
I mean, they just have second baseman all over the field.
They have horrible players, though.
I know, but, like, I don't know. Do you think they would take, like, a Kobe Mayo, a Connor Norby?
For sure.
And, like, a Chase McDermott?
Have you seen their farm system?
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
it's horrendous.
If I were them, I probably would look for a guy like Kobe Mayo as, like, a headliner for that deal. He's an elite power prospect. Oh, maybe the Orioles are...
a Florida kid, too?
Maybe the Orioles are lurking.
He weirdly went to the same high school
as Jesus Luzardo.
Jesus Luzardo.
Yeah, wow, that's funny.
Full circle. How many Orioles or Marlins fans are you thinking of that?
I don't know. Man, how many are even listening to this podcast? Probably zero.
Yeah, got to be. We got to be the only three? Two sick people on the planet besides those two guys that knew that they went to the same high school.
But again, the crux of this, if the Mets want to trade for Jesus Luzardo, though, you probably have to have Jet Williams. They're going to ask for Drew Gilbert. I'm going to say no. And then one of the high-end pitching prospects and another like high-variance good prospect.
I really don't want to give up Jet either.
I don't give up Jet at all. Jet's incredible. We tweeted today from Mets Up. We're going to have Prospect Mondays. Prospect stats on Mondays from Mets Up.
Especially because the Marlins, that's a poor team. We know that. They have no money. The more and more that Lizardo's contract keeps going and going, they're losing leverage. So it's like one of those things where it's like, show me Luzardo pitches well again.
But the rest of the league knows that, so they're going to wait them out. But the Marlins also probably have a bit of an urgency to trade. But also, maybe the Marlins don't have an urgency to trade.
They made the playoffs
last year. Yeah. They did lose their best hitter, but they made the playoffs.
Their president stepped down, Kim Ng.
Yeah, and Sandy Alcantara's really not going to pitch this year.
I think they were mad about winning, it seemed like, maybe.
Yeah. So maybe they will do, but I don't know. I can't see them trading him. It's a rumor going around right now. I think it's a combination of him being far too expensive and the Marlins just needing far too much in return that it's likely not going to happen right now.
Like with Cease, you're probably buying at the low right now.
Lowish, but you're not buying at the low because right now is the last time he's ever going to have the extra year control.
Fair.
Second the season starts, there's no more extra year control because now you're in the year.
Jesus Luzardo, we would be buying for sure at the highest.
The highest by far he's ever been. Maybe old time's sake, give him Starling Marte.
A deal. You want Starling Marte for Jesus Luzardo? Let's do it again. Run it back.
I'll drive Starling right down to Miami.
Oh, that would be a great video.
That'd be a fun car ride.
Drive Starling Marte. Why he would agree to that, I don't know.
I wouldn't.
He didn't want to come on the podcast when we were working with the Mets, so I doubt he wants to be in a car for 20 hours with us. Last one, Masataka Yoshida. This is one that we've seen people talking about in Mets world. DH, no power. Japanese guy. He was fine last year. He's a totally fine player.
He was significantly better the first 2 months than the last three.
Yes, he got tired quickly, it seemed like, in the Major League season, which is very understandable. Like, the NPB versus Major League Baseball season, super, super different.
And it's also definitely more grueling from, like a brain perspective, because you're just... Well, how many teams in the NPB? 12? 10?
I don't know. I have no clue. 20, maybe, I think.
It's definitely less than 30.
Oh, yeah,
So no matter what, you have to learn about more pitchers. You have to learn about more ballparks. You got to learn about more repertoires, more of this, more everything else. Yeah. A lot to deal with. A team that was probably not fun to be on the inside of either.
Yeah, the Red Sox had bad vibes.
Yeah. So he's a guy that people are talking about. There's another one where, like, I don't think he would cost anything because you're basically just taking on a contract.
I don't want him.
I don't want him at all.
I don't want to pay him that money.
I don't want DH with no power.
No. Like, that... Mets fans are a little obsessed with these DHs that got no power right now with him and Justin Turner as, like, two guys who are like, man, would really love to add him.
It's fit
like,
well.
Like, why? Why do you want... Justin Turner's going to hit 12 home runs. Why do you want Masataka Yoshida, who might hit 8? Like, I don't see a world where Masataka Yoshida makes sense on this roster, especially because he's awful in the outfield. Terrible.
No. Unless they give us a prospect, too, and we just
and
take
pay
the
his
contract. Yeah, exactly.
But
again, there's another rumor. I just don't think it makes sense. It's a name, but I'd rather get anybody else to do this.
No, 100%.
Let DJ Stewart do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, we're hitting that part of the offseason where you just got to start throwing rumors out here. We're making content, so we got to throw rumors at you guys, too. You didn't want to talk about these guys because you were like, we're never
going to. Yeah, there's no chance.
And I was like, content brain, we got to talk about it because the Mets fans still do want to know. But otherwise, I mean, we've been talking about 40 minutes on what was supposed to be the Sean Manaea quick episode, and we got the podcast feedback, so we need to get this bad boy out.
Yeah.
Anything else to talk about here, or we're good to wrap it up?
Briefly, the Robbie Ray trade was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I thought that Robbie Ray got traded from the Mariners to the Giants for Mitch Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani. That was before the Sean Manaea contract, but it really felt like the Mets could have used Mitch Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani, but didn't have a pitcher with upside like Robbie Ray, so it makes sense.
Yeah, like who are pitchers with upside? David Peterson and Tyler McGill. Like, that's who people would say.
Peterson does have upside still. They both do. I won't quit.
But that's Robbie Ray. And it was also like a big money thing, too, because Robbie Ray's contract is longer. Haniger and DeSclafani are off the books next year.
Yeah.
A great trade for both sides, honestly.
I think really funny, weird trade that works out, but Haniger's like the exact kind of DH option that like I would have liked to
have. And he could play the outfield.
Not very well anymore. The injuries have really killed athleticism.
Oh, really?
Yeah, killed.
Slow down a bit.
Yeah, remember when he tore his scrote?
Well, yeah, he hit the ball off the plate into his scrote. That's one of the most gruesome videos I've ever seen.
Yeah, but then
ripped his nuts.
And the Mariners ripped back around, traded Luke Raley for Jose Caballero, which I'm just going to say out loud, so somewhere like Jose Caballero might be this year's Isak Paredes, but be able to play shortstop. He has like the exact same batted ball metrics as Paredes, just needs to pull it more and lift it more.
How many home runs?
I think he's going to play a lot. He's probably now the Rays starting shortstop.
Yeah, sure, not the other guy.
Definitely not the other guy. That guy's going to jail. But
he's going to jail tonight.
I think 21.
I like that number. That's 21, a good line.
21
That's a
good homers.
Line. I was thinking 23. 21 right, might
21
be
and a half. Well, we're going to sit there. But fun trade, and the Rays are really good at getting a player like that who can just, they're like, we're going to squeeze some more power at you. They're going to do it with Richie Palacios, too.
You think so?
Shout out Brooklyn.
He is a Brooklyn kid, the
Shout
Palacios
out Brooklyn.
Brothers.
Yeah.
Where, is he the one who went to like Lincoln Tech or went to a Brooklyn high school? Because one of them went to Brooklyn high school, one of them went away.
I'd be honest, I don't know.
Yeah, I thought you'd know.
Richie was a driveline guy. Apparently, he's added 7 miles an hour to his max exit velocity.
That feels like a lot.
Yeah, it feels like the Rays are going to be like, all right, pull it over that fence right there.
And then you'd be like, oh, he hit 20 home runs. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Him or Johnny DeLuca, whoever gets the playing time.
Yeah, Tony Disco and Mitch would have been nice. But again, we just didn't have the stuff to give for there.
And Teoscar Hernandez signed a one-year contract to just have fun with the Dodgers.
We were never giving him $20
million. Good for
him. We weren't giving him $20 million for a year.
Dodgers are amazing.
Dodgers are amazing.
Hey, you know what? Good year to just kind of fuck around a little bit.
Yeah, good one to mess around.
Was this year we wanted to be like $100 million over the luxury tax again? I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe not. And I think that's where we'll wrap up this one for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Remember to follow us on our social media at MetsUp on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Links will be in the description if you're watching the YouTube video. The podcast feed is back, so if you'd like to listen to it on your way to work or in the car, you have that option now. And we also appreciate all you watching on YouTube because that does help us make some money, which would be great.
And if you guys are watching on YouTube, it would be really great for us as we try to sell this thing again, make some money. Not sell out again. We're not gonna sell out again, probably, unless it's a lot of money. So just go, even if you watch it, if you like a diehard YouTube subscriber, go on the podcast feed, either if it's on Apple or Spotify, whichever you got, and just click subscribe. Helps us a lot. To push this to people, maybe sponsors in the future.
1000%. Guys, thank you so much for listening and watching. We will catch you on the next episode of the Messed Up Podcast. Peace out.
See you guys next time. The YouTube comments been hilarious. Stick with it.
Yes.